Welcome back, Harry S. Dent Jr.
Oh, hi, Chris. Nice to be back.
You know, the recent Fed rhetoric from the FOMC, they may have raised rates a quarter point, but there's a lot of dovish talk from the Fed. Do you expect more rate hikes ahead, and what will that mean for the markets?
Well, you know, I mean, that's always hard to call. I mean, there's going to be at least another couple. My own thought is that they will raise another maybe two times this year. But by late this year, early next year, I do think the economy's likely to weaken again, and then the dovish talk will escalate very quickly. You've got another wild card, is that Yellen's not expected to stay in with Trump in after March when her term expires. I think it's kind of hard to overly guess what the Fed's going to do. I still think the economy's more important. The economy stays as strong as it's been with job growth and stuff. Yes, they'll keep hiking rates. They'd be crazy not to. Inflation's also been edging up, but if it turns around and slows down again, my theory, Chris, is very simple. Economists don't recognize the fundamental trend. Workforce growth is barely growing. In fact, it should shrink a little bit with increased baby boom retirement in the years ahead. All we've been doing with all this stimulus is hiring back people we laid off in the Great Recession. And once we get to full employment, and we're very close at 4.6 to 4.7% recently, there's not going to be people to hire, or you're going to start to have to pay a premium to lure people left voluntarily back in. And neither of those good. So I think job growth, if we may have another 3 to 6 months of this, you know, 200,000 job growth, but I think that could surprisingly come to an end. That's going to be a shock to the stock market, because how are we going to grow without those jobs?
But, you know, we've seen a lot of negative talk on the stock market the whole way up from 2009. What do you think it's going to take to get the market to roll over this time?
Well, how about California proposing to secede from the union? You know, how about, you know, job growth all of a sudden decelerate? Nobody can figure out why. How about the Greek, the next, the certain Greek default due for July, just when this petition in California is due to complete it? Or for voting on succeeding, what if the Greek default brings up the issue, well, what about Italy, of the bad loans and in the whole Eurozone, way more than anybody else, and they're in deep trouble, non-performing loans. There's no question in my mind, this market wants to go up, and it uses every reason possible. They thought Trump was going to be a wrecking ball. Next thing you know, now he's looking more like a wrecking ball. But the markets always find a reason to go up unless something serious happens. You know, like Italy threatening to leave the euro, or California threatening to leave the U.S., or growth decelerating, or a rapid rise of inflation. But I think there's a lot of things like that that could happen later this year. And I'm telling my subscribers, July is the most likely month I can see for a peak in stocks, and I don't expect any peak before that.
Give me your thoughts, then, on the new health care bill. You know, there's been considerable contempt, you might even say, on this topic. Obviously, they kicked it out. They pulled it off the floor on Friday. How important is this to our financial sector? How will, you know, insurance companies and the banking segment be impacted by this bill? And do you expect it to pass?
Well, you know, ultimately, they're going to have to do something, but they tried to push it too hard. And Trump's got this thing about my way or the highway, and I'll take my marbles and go home. And he says the Democrats didn't support it. No, a lot of Republicans didn't support it. That's what you'd expect. You'd expect Democrats not to support it. So, it just shows the market's got this typical bubble reaction. Oh, Trump's going to cut taxes and reform health care and cut deregulation, and he's just going to be able to walk in as an outsider and do it. Smart people have been saying all along, no, this is not going to be so easy, and the Republicans are not as united behind him as people assume, even though they have a majority. So I think the health care thing just shows, hey, I mean, that'll have to go through some ways, because you can't just leave it the way it is, because it is failing. But it's not going to be easy, and if that's not easy, then maybe the tax cuts aren't easy, and the deregulations are not easy. And the longer it takes for any of this stuff to go through, and the more it goes through partially, what it means to the economy is, hey, we were looking for more stimulus. You know, and we stopped the QE a good while ago, and the QE working less and less in Japan and Europe, where they are still going full throttle. So, I mean, QE doesn't work forever. You switched over. Oh, well, we're going to do fiscal stimulus. More stimulus on top of stimulus. How can you keep running an economy on artificial additives and steroids, and that's what we've been doing. So I think that's why at some point, stretching the economy, keep stretching the bubble, and then something goes wrong. Next thing you know, the markets are breaking down, and everybody realizes, oh, it was a bubble, because this is a bubble. This looks like every bubble in history, only worse, more global, more pervasive in markets. It's real estate, it's been commodities, stocks, everything. And bubbles burst. That's all they do in history. While they're building, markets ignore them, pundits ignore them. Everybody says it's not a bubble because this and that. This happens every single time in history. People like me who question the bubbles and say, no, I'm sorry, the bubble's going to burst, gets derided. People just don't want to hear it. Well, that's not a good sign. And so, but I think, you know, your first question is the most accurate. What is it? It's going to take something to break the market's reality. And number one reality is just simply, and I'm saying this, I'm going on the record saying this is demographically impossible. I don't care what Trump, he can cut taxes to zero. You cannot create 4% economic growth in an aging society with unprecedented debt levels. It is impossible, and if you don't think so, ask Japan. They've been simulating 3 times our rate is extreme, and for 2 decades instead of 7-8 years. And they're still flirting with zero growth, zero productivity, and zero inflation because old people don't get more productive and don't spend more money or earn more money.
Give us an idea about inflation. You know, obviously the Fed officials are concerned about the potential for this economy to start overheating. They want to put the brakes on it, but obviously they're also, on the other hand, a bit concerned that they might do so prematurely. You know, you touched on it just a bit, but they see something the rest of us maybe don't see. Do you see 1970s-style galloping inflation, or is that a relic of the past?
Our economy, and I show this clearly in all my books and even the latest one, The Sale of a Lifetime, our economy goes over about a human lifetime through 4 seasons, a mild inflation spring boom like 42 to 68, an inflationary extended recession like 68 to 80, again with high inflation, then a disinflationary, what I call bubble boom, because low inflation and falling rates always help create bubbles in financial assets, and then when all of that, the debt and financial bubbles get extreme and it blows up, you get a deflationary winter season downturn like 1929 to 42. And of course, that is the worst season. We're in that season. It started in 2008, but that's precisely why central banks are so desperately inflating. The problem is that inflation is only countering the natural deflation of debt deleveraging and financial bubbles bursting. What their whole job is just to keep the bubble going, keep talking it up, keep saying it's not a bubble, keep putting money in the system so people will continue to chase financial assets and just cross your fingers and hope something doesn't go wrong and the bubble blows again like the subprime crisis. And it will, something will go wrong at a point. And I think now sooner than later, because last Trump rally to me is the clearest trend I've seen in a while. It's a clear, irrational blow-off rally. He's not going to be able to do the thing on the radio one night. It's just that this is not going to work out well. I think he's telling people, look, would you rather get out of the bubble a little late or a little early? Well, the first crack in most major bubbles, tech bubbles to the 1929 bubbles and all the great bubbles in history, they tend to crash 40% or more in the first 2.5 months. So if you wait for signs that the bubble's finally ended,
exactly. No, I mean, it's just what physicians regularly inform us, that half of heart attacks, the first sign is instant death. It's sad and unfortunate, but we have to prepare. You brought up the idea of subprime. Well, we have another sector that looks as though it's in a subprime-like debacle, and that's student loans, student debt. This is another $1 trillion market, somewhat similar to credit cards, although credit cards, for the most part, are not secured. These loans are shaky because they tend to be given to folks who really don't have a track record of regular payments. Do you see this as, you know, maybe one of the legs on the shaky economic table?
Yeah, I think if you put the student loans together with the subprime auto, which is much more exaggerated this time than last time. The housing, the subprime and housing and mortgages is not, because they learned their lesson. They got whacked so hard. The student loans plus the auto subprime together. Yeah, I mean, you've got $2+ trillion of debt that can blow up, and already it's starting to blow up. Delinquencies are rising on the auto loans, and student loans have been rising. And of course, yeah, they're given to young people who don't have high income debt, and like you said, a track record of paying off debt. And they're in an economy that's not as good as it was for the baby boomers at their age. So they're having a hard time buying a home and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, this is not going to end well either. There's no way these student loans are going to be paid off, and no way these subprime auto loans paid off. And another one of many things that will go wrong at some time. And remember, when the subprime crisis happened, people saw it happening. It's just, Bernanke said, oh, no problem, we can handle this. Oh, it's not that big. No, it took down the whole world. Because all it did was prick a bubble. Yes, it was just four states, and it wasn't like it was only a small fraction of the debt. But it made investors, it brought them down to reality. Like I said earlier, something's got to happen to bring investors out of la-la land into reality about the politics, about the geopolitical things in the world, about the weak demographics, about the ever-growing debt that only is a heavier and heavier burden. And then they start looking at everything, because when the subprime loans go bad, then they look at all junk bonds, and they look at this, and they look at other loans, and that's what's going to happen. And then the market gets more real, and then these bubbles start to burst, because investors don't buy it anymore. And when the bubbles burst, wealth gets destroyed, and then you just get a domino effect downhill. So it just takes something to prick it. The subprime crisis was not the crisis. The crisis back in 2008 and 9 was unprecedented debt levels at all part levels of the economy and all around the world. And it just took something to bring that reality out of the bubble. And I'm just waiting for something to go wrong. And I think by, the second half of this year, I'm just putting out an issue right now. There's, 6 things that could go wrong. And so that is what I see happening. This bubble's already going to burst. There's no possible other scenario. It's just what's going to prick it and when.
In previous discussions on the show, you have kept a close eye on one of our top trading partners, of course, China, the economic powerhouse, and you're less impressed. You think that this might just be one of the dominoes that brings the economic system to its knees.
It just may be the last that they have created a bubble so extensive in a country. I mean, they have first world levels of debt, and we're way overstretched for a country that's still an emerging country, with an average income of $6,000 per capita. And they've done it in real estate and in overbuilding, 27% empty condos in the major cities, and whole cities built for a million that are still largely empty, railways to nowhere. The largest mall in the world had to be converted into a tourist attraction because there were no retailers in it. They just build stuff for nobody so they can keep urbanizing rapidly, but they're building stuff for nobody. And now last year I showed that migrant workers are actually net going back to rural areas again because the real estate costs, the pollution, and the traffic is so horrendous, and they're treated like second-class citizens. They're treated like illegal immigrants from Mexico in the United States. They're not even registered citizens in these urban areas. So that bubble is going to blow. Governments have overexpanded. That's why free market capitalism works better than dictatorships and communist governments, because they just do this sort of stuff. They just, grow by building stuff for nobody because it keeps everybody happy in the short term. And that's what politicians do when there's no restraints on them, and that's what China's done. They've made Russia look like teetotalers, and then the whole Russian top-down, centrally planned economy has never worked, and they're still incredibly poor compared to their education level, because it doesn't work. Accountability works, and even though in free markets we can get in bubbles like we have now, they will end at some point, and the chickens will come home to roost, and then people will make real changes, and then progress will come forward. China, they just keep building stuff for nothing, and they're going to do that until something goes wrong. Well, what I say has gone wrong is the rural migrant workers, we're going home. We've had enough of this. It doesn't work for us anymore. And if those people don't keep moving to cities, then you don't create more jobs, and it's impossible to keep building stuff for nobody, because at least now you can rationalize and say, yeah, we got a lot of empty stuff, but at the rate people are migrating, we're going to need it one day. Well, what when the migration is going back the other way, which has already been for 2015 and 16, 2 years straight, migrant workers, more people have gone back to rural areas than to urban areas, so you can't keep building stuff for nobody when the trend is reversing on you. You can do it when the trend's in your favor. It's no longer in their favor. So whenever the world wakes up to that, people are going to realize what I'm saying, and I'm 100% on this, not even 99. China is the greatest bubble in all of modern history, and when it bursts, it will be one of the greatest bubble bursts, and no amount of quantitative easing is going to be able to fight that.
We've heard the term ghost villages, ghost towns, but when you start to read articles about ghost megalopolises in China, that's what Harry S. Dent says is the wake-up call, the tipping point where the system, the global system, is in trouble. Okay, that's something to keep an eye out for. How much of this economic strength that we supposedly see here, you know, in the United States is a direct result of capital fleeing the very shaky EU and other nations around the world? The EU is just disintegrating. If and when that capital flow reverses, what will that mean for the United States, or will it matter at all?
It is a train wreck, and it is going to continue to disintegrate. It was kind of flawed in the beginning. And Europe is a very diverse group of nations on very different systems and very different, much, much greater differentiation in cultures and in income. I mean, southern Italy has half the GDP per capita of northern Italy. Much more rural, much less urban, non-industrial, fishermen, stuff like that, small restaurants. It's two different worlds. Even Mississippi and California are not that different. It's hard to integrate that. And you have this huge imbalance created by the euro itself, which made the currencies of places like Germany lower than they'd be on their own, made them more competitive, but also allowed the southern countries, the weaker countries, to borrow at lower rates, being part of the euro, which allowed them to rack up debt like Italy and Spain and all these countries. And now you got a mess. And so it is going to blow, but I tell you, that the thing people also don't see, China is leading this trend. Affluent people are laundering their money out of that country at the speed of light, and they do it by buying expensive real estate and say, oh, it's just for my kid while they're at, you know, a California college or something. They don't trust their government. They know they have a top-down government. I mean, China's one of the few places where some of the richest people come out and say, we're in a bubble. Nobody says that. The largest real estate developer in all the country said, this is a bubble. You know, the richest billionaire in China, the richest person, is selling their commercial real estate, which is tons and tons, as fast as they can. The smart people over there are very clear. It's not going to be a good outcome. It is a bubble and it will burst. So they're finding every way to get their money out of the country. They're doing it faster than the Europeans are. The Europeans are going to have to wait until something fails, or wait until, like in Cyprus, you know, they come in and start swiping half of your bank account if you have over 100,000 euros before they get it and say, yeah, we need to get our money out of here. If I had money over there, I'd have it out of there already.
No, exactly. I love these terms they use, rehypothecation. It's being written into the literature all over, in legislation all over the world. I mean, it started, as you mentioned, in the Cyprus area, moved up to Poland. It's even being written into municipal and state legislation here in the United States. So, of course, we all remember MF Global, how quickly our funds can be stolen, rehypothecated. So give us a quick synopsis of what you see for the gold market and precious metal stocks. I mean, obviously, they've done quite well this year. We've had a tough 5 or 6 years. Can we, you know, muster the strength for a rally here in the next 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, no, I don't think that. We were calling, you know, gold was definitely oversold at 1,050. We said, look, this is going to go back to around 1,400. And it did. And then it started going down again. Now it's bouncing because everything else doesn't look so good. And I think gold may have a little bit left in this bounce, but I think gold, it is an inflation hedge, and ultimately deflation is going to win here. And commodities, gold is also part of the bigger commodity cycle. It peaked in 1980 and peaked in 2011 with a lot of other metals and stuff. I think it's got further to go ultimately, but it's probably one of the first places I would be reinvesting. Commodities have been the bubble that have burst the most. Gold has held up better than most other metals and commodities. And I think you know, in the next year or two, when we get kind of like bubbles bursting everywhere, I'm expecting the two markets that will come out the strongest will be commodities, especially metals and energy, and it will be the strongest emerging countries, which means India and Southeast Asia more than China, because China's already peaked in workforce growth and has this overbuilding problem that could take a decade, a minimum of a decade, to work off. And so that's where I'm going to be looking first for my, because all things don't bottom together.
And, of course, on the CRB, we had a false breakout after several months of consolidation. Obviously, the bond market looks like it has finally been burst, that bubble. And then you have equities. Once equities roll over, maybe this year, maybe next year, at some point we have to have a really serious correction. I mean, what are the odds that funds will be searching for some type of safe haven?
Well, you know, I think it's an initial burst. I don't think it's the final burst. I think the high-quality bonds, like the U.S. Treasuries and the AAA corporates, will be the safe haven. They were in 2008, even when gold and silver got hit along. The treasuries went up, and the U.S. dollar went up, of all things. So I think there'll be another flight to quality at some point. I think bond yields are going higher, maybe for the next several months, but at some point, the failure of the stock market, exactly what you said, people are going to say, well, where do I go? Now the real estate's going down again, and stocks are going down, and commodities have been crushed, and blah, blah, blah. It's going to take people a while to have some faith in commodities. I think they are going to go to the high-quality, longer-term bonds, and that will create another run. You got to remember, in the 1930s, when the last time we had a deflationary, debt deleveraging economy, the only time in the last century, best two sectors were the 30-year treasuries and the 20-year AAA corporates. They doubled in value, while commodities, real estate, took a long time to come back. They did eventually come back, but it took a while. So gold would be one of my first choices, but I would be buying, if we saw the 10-year treasury at 3% or higher later this year, I'd be buying that first and then wait for the next broader collapse and everything, and then maybe be start buying gold in place, and then emerging markets like India.
We have truly are witnessing, I think you'd agree, you know, a housing bubble 2.0. Plenty of ways to argue that point. I like housing starts. U.S. housing starts, I feel, is one of the strongest leading indicators in the sector, and they remain robust. Just what might end that trend?
Well, you know, there's three things that I call more lagging indicators. That's job growth. Inflation almost always peaks well into the next recession, and rising inflation helps trigger that by pushing interest rates up. Housing, developers just keep building until it blows, and then it gets clams up, and that's what happened in 2008. And the biggest reason I don't, because I think job growth is about seeing its best. And again, as I said at the beginning of the show, job growth could drop not from 200,000 to 150. Job growth could drop almost suddenly from 200,000 to 50,000. And the long-term workforce growth rate for jobs is 0.2%. That is 25,000 jobs a month. And it's not even that strong in the next 6 years. But even long-term, if you don't have those jobs, new jobs, housing's not going to do well either, because housing primarily sells to people 27 to 41. They're in their prime working years and on the earlier side. And if jobs aren't growing, there's no way housing's going to keep growing.
There's a lot of question marks surrounding the job growth. I mean, even one of the Fed heads last week started to question the, I think he said it was the growth rate of employment. I mean, they have many different ways of looking at it and judging it, but tell us a bit more about the services you provide, how folks can find those services.
Just go to harrydent.com. I've got a free newsletter called Economy and Markets, upper right thing. You just put in your email address, you're on, and you can just get to know us better. I think right now they're offering, my latest book, The Sale of a Lifetime, they will send that to you $4.95. So that's the two best ways to find out more about what I'm saying right now.
Harry S. Dent Jr., we always appreciate your thoughts. Like to hear more of those again in 2017.
Thanks, Chris.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources.
Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.